rough night last night. If you were a fan of the Kansas Jayhawks, I don't mean to say that while giggling. That was supposed to be more of a silent giggle to myself, but I'm one of those people that, like, I'm of the belief that, like, I work in radio, I talk for a living, you know, much of my life is being lived out in front of a microphone. So I think that it is not only applicable, but it is sort of my duty to kind of, you know, talk a little bit about my personal life and my family and my loved ones and my life experiences with folks. And my younger brother is a Kansas fan. And last night we were on, you know, PlayStation Network, sitting in a party chat, playing 2K with a couple of our other friends. And this man is just venting relentlessly about the Kansas game last night. Can't say I blame him. 34-point loss last night out in Utah to BYU, 91-57. Jayhawks shot 36% from the field, 28% from the three-point line, only attempted 5 free throws the entire game. 5 free throws. They turned the ball over 15 times. I'm not saying this facetiously. BYU beat them in every statistical category. They scored more points on better shooting percentages from the field, from three, from the free throw line, where they shot more of those than Kansas did in each of those three spots. They had more offensive rebounds, more defensive rebounds, more total rebounds, more assists, more steals, less turnovers. They committed one more foul, and they had the same number of blocks. Yikes. It is the worst loss by point differential in the Bill Self era at the University of Kansas. And so the alarm has been sounded a little bit, right? It has been a tough couple of weeks for the University of Kansas. And I was talking with Carrington about it earlier today on the drive. There's a little bit of me, right? There is a part of me, admittedly, that is sort of, I'm playing the world's smallest violin for you Kansas fans. I'm sorry. I'm not a Mizzou fan. I'm not a K-State fan. I'm an Iowa fan. I have no real allegiance to anybody that hates the University of Kansas. And I don't hate the University of Kansas. But it does feel a little bit first world problem like to say, oh, woe is me, we're 17-9. But from the standpoint of the University of Kansas and KU basketball, especially in the Bill Self era, 17-9 for Kansas basketball is 12-15 for everybody else at best. Might be more of the inverse. A 17-9 season for Kansas is like a 9-17 season for most others. And so I get the frustration, especially when you look at the talent that this Kansas team has up and down their roster. I mean, when Hunter Dickinson transferred from Michigan to Kansas, that was a massive recruiting coup in the early days of the transfer portal and NIL. That looked to be a massive swing for them that was going to really, really continue to solidify how good this Kansas team was going to be for years and years and years. And I think it's fair to say he's been a disappointment. In a lot of respects, he's been a disappointment. He had a double-double last night, 12 points, 14 boards, but he was 5 of 13 from the field. Right? KJ Adams is an athletic freak, and he does remarkable things out there on the floor, but he also makes some of the strangest, most head-scratching decisions you've ever seen in your life. Like, he will sky up, and his head will go above the rim to pull down a rebound, and you'll be like, that's insane. Or he'll block somebody off the glass, and you'll be like, oh, what a play he made. And then he'll get the ball and throw a full-court pass 20 feet over somebody's head and out of bounds. Like he was trying to make a full court shot at the end of a quarter or a half. Like, it just, he leaves you scratching your head a lot with his decision making. Flory Badunga has a lot of similar qualities that Joel Embiid had when he arrived at Kansas. Sort of a smaller version, right? He's only like 6'9", 6'10", but he has a lot of those sorts of tools. He's new to the game, but he's got the athletic ability. he just doesn't seem to be getting a lot of run with that, and he's not the most assertive guy. I mean, he put two shots up in 21 minutes last night. I know that's not his game, but you got to at least give it a shot. Zeke Mayo was brought in as this highly touted shooter for the Kansas Jayhawks, right? Coming out of the transfer portal, he shot so well from the three-point line in his previous three seasons at South Dakota State at a very, very high clip, I may add. I mean, he shot over 4.5 threes a game last year at South Dakota State and knocked down 39% of them. This year at Kansas, he's shooting 40% from the three-point line on 6 attempts a game. It just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be the same. Last night he was 2-for-7 from behind the arc. He hasn't always brought it. He's lacked consistency at times. He'll either go 5-for-7 or 2-for-7, it seems. There's no 3-for-5s. There's no 2-for-4s or, you know, 4-for-7s. There's just nothing in that vein. And DeJuan Harris, as good a passer as he is, and he's a very, very good passer. He's a very willing and capable on-ball defender. He's got quick hands. Very, very smart and intuitive on the defensive side of the floor. He can't score. And the best teams that Bill Self has had in his tenure at the University of Kansas, he has had good passers, but offensive-minded scoring point guards. Mario Chalmers, Frank Mason. I almost said Brandon Graham. It's not. Graham was his last name. Devontae Graham. Those have been the best Kansas teams that we've seen. Have been these that have had just great, outstanding guards that could defend, that could pass, but more than anything, they could score and score at a high clip, especially on the perimeter. They just don't have that this year. This team doesn't seem to have that dog, so to speak. They don't have an identity at all. And so I can't say I can poke fun and I can laugh a little bit about, you know, Kansas fans complaining about being 17-9. The talent on this basketball team is better than 17-9. I mean, I saw AJ Storr do outstanding things at Wisconsin last year. He was so good for the Wisconsin Badgers last season. He's come to Kansas with that massive NIL deal that followed him, the million-dollar man and all those things, and he's been a disappointment. Shaquille Moore hasn't been what Kansas fans thought he was going to be. Ryland Griffin, as highly touted a recruit as he was, it just hasn't seemed to come to fruition, and especially since, I don't know, early December? I mean, they went and beat Duke 75-72, and it just has not been the same since, right? You beat Furman, but then you lost two straight games at Creighton and at Mizzou. You bounced back a little bit and beat NC State, but then you started Big 12 play, and it has been wildly up and down. You lose a game, you win three in a row. You lose a game, you win two in a row. You lose a game, win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game, win a game, and you've lost now two straight. They have not won two straight games since they beat Kansas State at home and went on the road to beat TCU. And that was after they got boat raced by Iowa State in Hilton. It's been a rough stretch. And I don't know how many times you can hear Bill Self say, oh, this team just needs to regroup, and this team needs to do this, and this team needs to do that. I said this earlier today with Carrington. What makes programs like Kansas and Duke and now UConn, right? What made Jim Boeheim's Syracuse team special? What made Izzo's teams at Michigan State for years and years special? What made Krzyzewski's teams at Duke special? What made Roy Williams' teams at North Carolina special? What makes Blue Blood special is that they are better teams in February, March, and in April than they were in November and December. Look at Duke this year. They are a completely different team here in mid to late February than they were in mid to late November. Auburn, Alabama, much better teams than they were 3 or 4 months ago. I can't say that about the University of Kansas. I can't say that about this Jayhawks basketball team. I'm not sure they're worse than they were in November, but they're not better than they were in November. This feels like a team that has sort of flattened out. They have straight line themselves. From the beginning of the season to this point, we have not seen a marked improvement, I would say, anywhere on this Kansas roster. Top to bottom, 1 through 15, and the walk-ons. This team looks to be the same team that was playing against Duke and North Carolina in November and early December. They have not improved, and we hear coaches use it all the time, and we hate it because it's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. You want to be playing your best ball at the end of the year, right? In college football, in the NFL, you want to be playing your best football in December and January. You want to be playing your best basketball in February and March. You want to be playing your best baseball in October, or in August and September. This Kansas team is playing the same basketball that it was playing in March, and it is not their best. And you don't have a lot of time to right this ship. You're 17-9. Your chances of missing the NCAA tournament are slim to none. I mean, you've got games against Oklahoma State, Colorado, Texas Tech, Houston, and Arizona. You may lose those last three games, but I don't see them losing to Oklahoma State or Colorado. So you're 19-12, and you're the University of Kansas. You're going to get in to the field of 68. At 500 in the Big 12 this year, as good a league as the Big 12 is this year, because I think it's the best league in college basketball top to bottom, outside of maybe the SEC, you're going to get into the field. But you're the University of Kansas. You're used to being a top four seed, a one seed, a two seed, a three, or a four. This looks like a Kansas team that may hover around the six or seven line, and that's the generous side of things. It's a down year for the University of Kansas, no question about it. But for the rest of us, there's a little bit of a boo-hoo attitude, because for the rest of us, we would give a great deal to be 17-9 right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. It's almost like a testament to the success of that historic program to say, like, it's over when you are 17-9. Like, yes, our worst year in my lifetime watching college sports is your team safely making the tournament and sitting somewhere between the 5 and 7 line. Like, yeah, you're kind of right. Boo hoo. My thing about the fan base at the University of Kansas is, like, they every year it starts off this way. It's over. This is the worst team Bill Self has ever coached. They can't score. They're undisciplined. They're immature. And then they figure it out. And then as you get into March, you get to listen on, like, Twitter and the text line to about how Kansas is just better. And it's like, hey, man, you guys did all of this. Like, you went from point A to point B in the most roundabout way, but you did that yourself. Like, the rest of us neutral observers or K-State or Mizzou fans, like, we did not go on that path with you. We knew you would be at the top come March. I think that this is beyond repair this season, for many of the reasons you outlined at the start of this segment. But it is, I will admit, it is funny to watch the meltdowns on Twitter every time Kansas plays. It's funny. It's amusing.
It is a little bit funny. And you know, I think that there's an interesting dynamic at play, right? We talk about transfer portal in NIL in this era of college athletics. And NIL and the transfer portal is what allowed a player like Hunter Dickinson to come to Kansas. Yeah. But I think what it's also allowed is for other programs to level the playing field and do so quickly. Right, it has allowed for guys who are major Division II talents to come to Division I and do big things. Right, look at what Drake's doing right now. Ben McCollum in his first year at Drake, coming from Northwest Missouri State, again, go Bearcats, in year one with players like Bennett Sturts and Byron Alexander, who were great Division II players who have now become all conference level players in the Division I level. It's allowed that to happen quickly. You allow guys who are great players at mid-major schools to jump up to major Division I college basketball, playing in the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, and absolutely hit the ground running. It's allowed teams to become more competitive and to do so quickly. And for the programs that don't want to go after guys in the transfer portal and through the NIL and those sorts of things, what it's done is allowed for roster spots to open up and allowed for better opportunities to go out and recruit high school kids too. high school kids that would have had their pick of the litter with the Dukes and the UCLAs and the Kansases and the Michigan States and the programs of that nature, who are now going after transfer portal prospects because they've deemed them more ready. Those high-value high school prospects are now going to Texas Tech and Purdue and Iowa State and places like that, who can get very competitive and very talented very quickly. So you've got big-time prospects going to programs that 5 or 10 years ago they may not have even considered because of transfer portal and the NIL, and now this new JUCO rule that's coming out where JUCO eligibility doesn't count, so that's going to be a huge thing. I think the playing field is a little bit more competitive than it was. And I think you saw that in the college football playoff. I think that there was a big part of why you saw programs like Indiana get into the field this year and not Alabama. Because with transfer portal and NIL, teams who aren't normally given an opportunity or don't have the resources to be competitive can be competitive again. And I think that's fun. I think that's a huge part of it. And with the transfer portal, you're taking a risk. Right? I mean, you're going to take big swings. You're going to disrupt team chemistry. And if you've got the talent and the horses can band together and do it, then great. But if it doesn't, it can blow up in your face. And it's a little bit more the former this year, or a little bit more the latter than the former for the Kansas Jayhawks this season.
Yeah, and I won't take the stance of like dancing on the grave of some of these great coaches that have built their resumes before like NIL and the transfer portal. Like, I think more often than not, Bill Self's going to figure it out, right? I trust him. And then, you know, on the college football side, like, I know Saban like famously left and like cited some of these things, but I trust a lot of those bigger name guys to figure it out more often than not. But yeah, like, I think you will see bigger programs have down years more often than they used to, if that makes sense. And that's, yeah, in my opinion, as someone who's not a fan of a blue blood, I would consider myself more of a neutral college observer. I mean, I'd probably lean Mizzou if I had to pick, but I have no strong allegiance anywhere. It does add more intrigue to this thing.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah. I mean, I'll openly admit I am an Iowa fan. It could always be worse, KU. All right. I'm an Iowa fan. The Iowa men's basketball team has won exactly 2 basketball games since January 12th. It has been a month and a week. Iowa has played 9 basketball games. They've won 2 of them. All right. It can always get worse. They went on the West Coast and got boat raced by UCLA. They lost against USC. They lost to a bad Minnesota team. Ohio State boat raced them. They lost to Purdue. They lost to Wisconsin. They just got killed by Maryland. But they beat Rutgers on the road, so there's that. 913-586-7965 is our number if you want to send us some messages on the text line. We'll read a couple of those here when we come back. We've got more to get to, some more NFL news, some Kansas City-based sports news that I want to talk about here, and some college football news to be had. Maybe some potential changes with the college football playoff. We'll talk about all that coming up next here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Messy. I don't know if I did that right. I probably didn't. That was probably
sounded pretty good.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Lionel Messi at Sporting Park over on the Kansas side tonight, scoring a goal. Inter Miami has got a 1-0 lead on Sporting Kansas City tonight. Lionel Messi, maybe the coldest game of his career, puts a goal in, what'd you say, the 52nd minute?
In the 56th minute, is still playing. Ooh. and then did not get subbed out after the goal. He's still playing in the 59th minute right now. Yeah, my weather app says the wind chill is -8 right now, Logan. And if you have gone, I mean, they're not listening if they're at the game, but if you know someone who went out there, they're obviously crazy about this great game. And to see Leo score a goal with the assist to Sergio Busquets, by the way, is a great reward for the craziness that is sitting out there for an hour, hour and a half in this. It's like dangerously cold.
Yeah.
Weather.
Oh yeah. No
Absurdly
question.
Absurdly cold weather to watch Leo play. So good on everybody out there, and thank goodness that you got a show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the memory that you will have will last a lifetime, right? You got to go to this extremely historically cold game, and you got to see Lionel Messi score a goal, which is astonishing, right? Many people never thought he would come to the United States to play soccer ever. And, you know, to have that opportunity is really, really cool. One of the greatest soccer players that's ever kicked a ball.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
And he's played in this metropolitan area twice in a calendar year. Like, it's insane. Or I guess it'd be a rolling year because it was like last April. I paid a not crazy amount of money, but like more money than I would normally spend to go watch soccer, to go watch Sporting KC when they played at Arrowhead last year, and felt completely vindicated in my purchase when he scored an absolute banger from outside of the box that game. It was amazing. The crowd was incredible that night. Sporting made some dumb mistakes. Otherwise, they played, you know, with Inter Miami competitively. I don't think they're doing so tonight. But to get a chance to watch Messi play is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Like you mentioned, we never thought he'd be over here in the States doing this. And, I mean, I definitely would have considered going out there tonight had I not already seen him play last spring.
Right. I mean, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a memory you'll take with you forever. I just hope that you also are able to take your fingers and toes with you. That would be my concern. We were talking, I've been producing the midday show over on KMBZ the last couple of weeks with Jamie and Grayson, and Jamie and I were talking about this game earlier today, and it was sort of like, she asked me point blank, she's like, would you go? No! I'm not the biggest soccer fan on the planet, admittedly, so for a soccer game, no. For a Chiefs game, I'm probably not going. All right. I mean, unless I've got free tickets to go to an AFC championship game, sure, maybe. The only way that I could maybe go in weather like this would be, and I know this is going to be blasphemous for some, I am probably a bigger Iowa fan than I am a Chiefs fan. That's at least just my own personal belief system. I might endure this kind of weather to see the University of Iowa host a home college football playoff game in the first round. That's maybe the only way I would go out and watch a sporting event in this kind of weather. But for those of you who did, I applaud you. I just hope that you dressed as warmly as you possibly could, layer upon layer upon layer for you and those around you, right? If you took your small children to the game, I get the opportunity to go watch Lionel Messi play. I just, you know, I hope that folks are staying safe out there more so than anything else.
For sure. I like soccer enough and am enamored with Messi enough that if I had never seen him before, I do think I would have gone tonight. You're talking to a guy who did go to that Chiefs game against the Dolphins 2 seasons ago, where I think the real feel was in like the negative 30s or whatever. I mean, it was insanely cold, but we were gifted with free club level seats. We got to go inside during the breaks. Like, not sure how I would have fared in the upper level where people were like losing phalanges, I heard. So, I think Messi is about as big of a global superstar that an athlete has been. I think he's one of the top like five followed people on Instagram, with people like mm-hmm. Cristiano Ronaldo and like Justin Bieber. I mean, just like a massive superstar. I'm very thankful that I saw him last year, because I don't want to be out there in the -8 wind chill, Logan. I don't want to.
I don't blame you. For anybody who had the word phalange on their after hours bingo card tonight, congratulations. You just won a Rolls Royce.
Yeah. Cash it.
That's absolutely astonishing. Great for you. You know, before we got into this subject about the sporting game against Inter Miami tonight and Lionel Messi's goal and how cold it is here in the Metro this week, we were talking about the struggles for KU basketball. And it's been interesting. I got a 918 here in the text line, says KU basketball spends $4 million on the wrong employees. If a business does this, they go bankrupt. They are going bankrupt in the Big 12. Bill Self has to change the culture and reset next year, or it'll be another mediocre year. Yeah, I think he tried to go find talent quickly rather than do what he's done in the past, and that is find fits for his system. And do that via the high school ranks and bring guys in who will buy into the system. So that could certainly be a different culture approach that they could bring. I got a 5-1 here, 2 here, talking about NIL and the transfer portal. Saying the problem with NIL and the transfer portal is it's destroyed allegiance. People don't know who their players are, and the players don't give a crap about the schools they're at. It's all about money and making it to the next level. Aside from perhaps some bizarre sort of parody, NIL, portal, and greed on the part of both the schools and the players have ruined college sports. I'm going to disagree with some. I'm going to agree with some of what you just said. I agree with you wholeheartedly that it has destroyed allegiance. I think that that is a big part of why you're seeing attendance issues at programs across the country right now, at football games, at basketball games, baseball games, soccer, whatever it might be. People don't, they don't gravitate towards the players anymore, right? It's hard because, number one, it's this constant reworking of the roster on a year-by-year basis, right? You know, when a freshman came into the program 10 or 15 years ago, you'd be like, okay, I need to learn who this guy is because 2, 3, 4 years down the road, this guy could be a major part of the program. You don't have that anymore because there's always that overwhelming fear that, oh, this guy may just leave after his freshman year because he didn't get enough playing time, or, you know, he feels like he's better than the guy above him on the depth chart or whatever it is. And there's always that fear in the back of your mind that that guy is going to leave. It's also, you don't want to create a relationship with that person because you don't want to see a guy as a freshman or a sophomore fall in love with him and then watch him leave and get your heart broken. It's hard. So I agree with you that it has destroyed allegiance in some way, in a lot of ways. To say that it's ruined college sports, I disagree with. College sports was founded on potentially the greatest, college athletics was formed on the greatest lie in the history of athletics, in my opinion, and the biggest lie in the history of sport, and that is amateurism. That is student athlete. I always hated that phrase, and I love that it has been proven to be the falsehood that it always was. Players deserve to be making money off their names. The rest of us do. We live in a capitalist society. That's how it's supposed to operate. You put out a product. If you are good and that product is, people gravitate towards that product, you deserve to be compensated for it. And more than just a scholarship. I'm sorry. I know plenty of people. I got academic scholarships when I was in college. What money was I providing? What kind of revenue was I generating for Northwest Missouri State University? Slim to none, I assure you. But there are athletes that are generating millions, if not tens of millions of dollars to their institutions, and they were earning no money off of it. That's not right. That's not capitalism. That's not what this country was founded on. That's not how our economic system works. It was a blatant cut and print case of antitrust. It was a antitrust violation through and through. And at some point, the NCAA, it had to be torn down. That format had to be torn down. I put so much blame on the NCAA because they spent such a long time trying to sustain and keep in place a corrupt and wrong system rather than trying to find an avenue once it was gone, because we all knew it was going to go at some point. We all knew that there's no way that amateurism and the concept of a student athlete was going to survive. It just wasn't. It's illegal. It was not going to survive in the long term. And the NCAA had so much time to find a solution. Okay, when this fails, here's what we do. Here are the rules that are implemented. Here are the guardrails. Here's what we're going to put in place. Here's this committee that's going to enforce this. And instead, they didn't. They just continued to try to fight and hold on for dear life as the rope continued to get thinner and thinner and thinner until it finally snapped. They put all their eggs in one basket, and that basket was dropped off a cliff. And the rest of us just have to sit here and take it because the NCAA did not do its job and preparing for something like this.
Yeah, I'm letting you cook. I mean, you're on a heater right now, Logan.
I have great disdain for the NCAA.
This was a good debate like 10, 15 years ago when NIL seemed so like unattainable. But it's like a non-starter now. I can't even like get myself riled up like you just did to debate somebody on this topic. It seems so cut and dry to me. And this is not like, you know, some people choose to go to college or choose to like work on their trade or go straight into the workforce after high. Like, there's many different routes you could take. You can go into the service. I mean, nobody would work 4 years for free for no benefit before they get a chance to get paid out of high school. Not one person. I don't care what you're doing. You're getting some sort of benefit, whether it's experience, whether it's education, whether it's money. You're doing something before you enter the workforce if you're not going straight into the workforce
exactly.
after
and
school.
For, and for those guys, they have no guarantee of doing that after those 4 years are done.
Yes. Yeah, you're doing that for a chance to get selected into your field. It's a scam, and you know, I'm not saying athletes are better than the normal person. We all have our skills that make us valuable, but as a society, we gravitate towards this. It generates dollars, and those people deserve to make the money. I don't know. Like yeah. That's we have deemed this skill to be entertaining and valuable.
No question.
And I have that skill, and I can't get paid for it.
Yeah.
How does that make sense?
Imagine you graduate high school. And you get hired to be a broker on Wall Street, and you work for a firm on Wall Street, some Fortune 500, for 4 years, and you make millions of dollars for that organization, and you make $0 off of it. And then when those 4 years are up, they say, you can't work for us anymore, and you can't work for any other broker firms either. Have fun. Go sell insurance.
Yeah, I'll call back to the TV show conversation.
What?
You know, Harvey Specter treated Mike Ross not very well, but Mike Ross was still getting a fat paycheck
yeah.
during the time in suits. And like to work for 4 years and then for Harvey to have said, like, we'll see about you getting paid in the future would have been a much bigger scam. And like you said, an illegal one. So I'm glad the system is where it is. And the blame does lie with the NCAA. If there is blame to be lied, it should be lied. If there is blame to be divvied up, it should 100% go to the NCAA.
No question about it. The NCAA and in some way, shape, or form, these institutions and these conferences, because nobody had a plan for once amateurism collapsed. And so now we're sitting in an era where people are still trying to figure out what it means. What is NIL? What is the transfer portal? What's legal? What's illegal? You know, nobody has a plan for how to figure these things out. And until somebody steps forward and makes those plans, it's going to continue to be the Wild West. It is the right format. It is a step in the right direction from a just fiscal standpoint, from a moral standpoint, from a legal standpoint. This is what needed to happen. And you have to put guardrails in place to prevent the craziness that is happening right now. 918 says there is no such thing as roster poaching with NIL. A player could go get a bigger paycheck every year in college. Yeah, as he should. And the rest of us have that opportunity too. If you're working in a job right now and somebody comes to you and says, hey, we'll offer you $25,000 or $30,000 more or $15 more an hour to do what you do to do the exact same job somewhere else, a lot of us would take a look at that opportunity pretty strongly. That's, again, how American society works. And is it unfortunate in regards to college athletics? Absolutely. But that's the society the rest of us live in. Why shouldn't they also? 913-586-7965 is our number. A lot more coming up right after the break here. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber and Nathan Williams on 96.5 The Fan. NIL, the transfer portal, the NCAA, all these things being discussed on the program tonight. After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber, joined by my producer for tonight's show, is Nathan Williams. So, somebody in the chat just said, hey guys, you guys are sports fans. Why don't you get out to Sporting Park watching Messi score? It's still above zero. I couldn't even stand outside my car while I was pumping gas. Yeah, man. That's a different level of fandom, and I applaud you for it. I personally, I think I could swing it, man. I just way too, and I'm a cold weather guy, admittedly. I'm one of those people, one of those psychopaths that I would rather it be 10 degrees than 100 degrees. I cannot stand warm weather, hot weather. I know, like, my wife loves to sleep warm. I can't stand it. I mean, put the thermostat at 60. Like, I need it cold in my house. I'm one of those that believes, you know, more layers. It's easier to put more layers on than take layers off to cool yourself down versus warm yourself up. But there's no way I would sit out at Sporting tonight and watch a game like this in 0 degree weather. Yeah, there's just no way.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. And well, on all aspects, I wouldn't sit out there tonight, even though I prefer, you know, cooler weather to warmer weather. The fact that I hate the heat doesn't make this any more bearable. I don't know. This is insane. It's going to be like negative 15 wind chill overnight tonight. It's already like close to negative 10. And I will say, though, I'm a Sporting KC fan. I am so glad that you got to see Leo Messi score a goal if you sat out.
Right.
I know a lot of people are going to say they wanted to see him play well, but probably Sporting win. It is just like a cup match. It's a CONCACAF Champions Cup match. It's not an MLS match, so they're not, you know, receiving points if they won tonight. But I don't know. Not for me, Logan.
No chance. Sorry. But, you know, talking about college athletics, big news out of the college football playoff today, as the commissioners of the college football playoff, both the SEC's Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti of the Big Ten have agreed that the college football playoff seeding formula needs changed. During a joint meeting between athletic directors representing their respective conferences on Wednesday, Sankey and Petitti agreed that the way teams are seeded in the 12-team format should change coming up this fall. Of course, that's big news because the SEC and the Big Ten are the two biggest institutions in college football today. They are the two biggest conferences, the most powerful, the most wealthy to some extent. But it still has to be a unanimous vote. And that includes 10 FBS commissioners as well as the athletic director at Notre Dame. So all 11 of them would have to collectively vote to change the current seeding formula. Sankey said that he's prepared to vote for seeding change, but that the vote has to be unanimous. You know, this comes after you had teams like Boise State, who was the number 9 team in the country, get a 3 seed in a first round bye. Arizona State, who was the number 12 team in the country, got a 4 seed in a first round bye. Meanwhile, the number 3 and 4 teams in the country in Texas and Penn State were then forced to be the 5 and 6 seeds and they had to host a first round game. They didn't earn a bye despite being a top 4 team, 2 of the top 4 teams in the country. And as we saw, they were 2 of the best teams in the country. We saw Texas and Penn State get to the semifinals. They got to the Final Four, so to speak, of the college football playoff this year. Penn State ultimately lost to Notre Dame and Texas lost to Ohio State in those semifinals, but they got there. Meanwhile, Boise State and Arizona State didn't get out of the first round that they played in after in the quarterfinal round. So this comes as no surprise to anybody. It still has to be voted upon, obviously, but the fact that the two biggest proponents of the committee in Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, and Tony Petitti of the Big Ten, both agreeing that this needs to change does carry quite a bit of weight. Will it change? We'll have to wait and see. It has to be a unanimous vote, which, as we all know, is a very, very difficult thing to do. Even an 11-person committee, only one no vote, and it's a no-go. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a break and come back and wrap up our show tonight, After Hours, with Logan Weber, my producer for tonight's show, Nathan Williams on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Few minutes left on tonight's program, After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Producing tonight's show is Nathan Williams. covered a wide variety of topics, conversations during today's show. We talked about college football playoff, considering changes to their seeding format. We talked about salary cap increases in the National Football League. We visited with Jordan Foote earlier in the show. Big thank you to him for sticking around for a couple of segments there in the 6 o'clock hour. If you want to go back and listen to those, you can go to the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find our podcast from there. You download the Odyssey app, folks. You can get every podcast that we publish from our live shows. You can listen to our shows live. You can also find our chapters screen. And what that does is it basically curates your listening directly to the topic that you want to hear discussed, right? If you want to hear us talk about the Chiefs, you can find it there on chapters, or Royals, or college football, college, whatever it is. Find it right there on the chapters page. Pretty cool thing that they've got there, courtesy of the Odyssey app, which is available on your iPhone or Android. We talked about the struggles for KU basketball and last night's 34-point loss to BYU. We even talked about movies. We spent the entire 7 o'clock hour talking about our favorite and most rewatchable movies and TV shows of all time, and you guys really got involved with that, and I greatly appreciate it. I love the use of the text line. I like being able to interact with you guys. This is your show as much as it is my show, right? I mean, I know that I'm the one sitting here doing most of the talking, but I love being able to interact with you guys and get your opinions and answer questions and share your thoughts and your opinions on the subject at hand. I always find that incredibly enjoyable. I think it makes for a more fun show in that sense. With a few minutes that we've got left here at the end of our program, I want to share the news surrounding the charges that have now been filed to a group of burglars that were targeting the houses of famous athletes across the United States. And this does include the break-ins at the home of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, their homes, both of them, which were broken into. The group or a portion of the group that was conducting these robberies have been apprehended and now charged. The burglars who recently targeted famous athletes like Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, as well as Joe Burrow and others, they were, according to police reports, they were traveling all around the country, bouncing from city to city and renting cars. They were using rental cars with fake IDs to go to the homes of these famous athletes when they were out of town playing in a game, whatever it might be, and robbing their homes, then ditching the cars, using burner phones, whatever. They wound up being caught, at least according to the FBI, because of a selfie. After one of these robberies, one of the groups took a selfie of themselves with some of the stolen property, a safe, a collection of watches and jewelry that they were wearing, throwing up the peace sign and whatever else. They were arrested shortly after this photo, according to police, according to law enforcement, was taken shortly after they'd robbed the home of Bobby Portis, a forward for the Milwaukee Bucks. It says that it was a group of seven Chilean burglars who had targeted the star athletes over the course of 3 months last year and stole an estimated $3 million worth of material. In the document, the FBI lays out how the gang members were undone by allegedly posting photos for their co-conspirators to see via an iCloud site. And that's how they got caught. The Chilean gang is known to travel throughout the United States and burglarize residents belonging to popular and well-known professional athletes from the NBA, NHL, and NFL, NBA, and NHL. The gang is responsible for stealing jewelry, expensive watches, U.S. currency, and other high-value merchandise. They divvied out responsibilities to each member, such as renting vehicles, getting hotels or rentals, acquiring fake IDs, and then contacting fences to then sell the merchandise after they had stolen it. They allegedly connected a New York City-based pawn shop to this ring and seized it earlier this month. Up to now has been their ability to monitor not only their victim schedules, but also the activities of police investigators. But they haven't mentioned the athletes by name. the locations and dates of the burglaries for these Chilean nationals who were arrested coincide directly with when Mahomes' house was broken into, when Travis Kelce's home was broken into, along with Bobby Portis's and Joe Burrow's. The complaint also lists two unidentified athletes, one of which was from the Memphis Grizzlies and another from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Interesting. Very interesting. So, yeah, there was speculation and reports that these may have been connected to one specific group. And now, according to the FBI, it seems incredibly likely. And they're charging them as if it was one group, one cohesive unit that was conducting these break-ins across the country. I mean, from Kansas City to Ohio to Milwaukee to Tampa Bay and Memphis. I mean, that's a lot of travel to go do these things and renting cars and using fake IDs and all that. It was elaborate. You give them credit, but they got caught all the same.
Yeah. You could just go to work instead. I think that's a dumb thing to spend your life doing and a dumber way to get caught, Logan.
Fair point.
But if, since the person is doing the dumb thing, I'm not completely shocked at the fact that they got caught in a dumb way as well. You hate to see that. And I get that an athlete is probably a sitting duck when it comes to something like this. Your schedule is so public, your whereabouts are so public. I understand the concept of we know when they're not going to be home. Mm-hmm. And I hope, some football players have talked pretty candidly about this. And I know they're investing in security and getting tips from the league about how to prevent these situations. And just a gross situation. I don't know.
Not great by any stretch of the imagination. What is great is if you're a Mizzou fan right now, you've got to be thrilled by what's going on in Columbia at this moment. Somebody just said in the text line, hopefully that Kelce and Mahomes get their stuff back. I don't know. I don't know if they will. I mean, they turned around and sold those things to Fences, and Fences are very, very good about turning things around and reselling them again. So I'm not entirely sure that they'll get their stuff back. I agree with you. I hope they do, but it seems very, very unlikely. But Mizzou is blowing out Alabama right now. Latest update, about 3 minutes to go in the first half. Mizzou's up 51-33 in the first half. Mark Mitchell's got 16 points on 7 of 10 shooting. Anthony Robinson's got 10. Caleb Grill with 8 off the bench. Tigers are shooting 59% from the field, 43% from the three-point line. This Mizzou team is ranked 15th in the country. They're 19-6 and could very well be on their way to their 20th win of the season. Already here, moved to 20-6, and doing so by beating the number 4 team in the country. So far, they're doing it in very, very impressive fashion. That'll do it for tonight's program. I want to thank you for joining us. For Nathan Williams, I'm Logan Weber. This has been After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. We out.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your